This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Tom Foti in Washington. It is still hot or hotter in most of the lower 48. The late summer heat, perhaps most extreme in the Southwest, especially much of Texas. At least 14 people have died from heat-related causes this summer around Fort Worth.
A majority of the people who died from the heat across the county this summer were over the age of 60 and were found in homes without working AC or where the AC was turned off. Meals on Wheels of Tarrant County works with TXU and Tarrant County to install free air conditioners for the elderly. They say they've seen an uptick in requests for AC units this summer.
KTVT's Olivia Leach. Cities up and down the East Coast have been dealing with schools that are way too hot. A new study shows large numbers of young children hurt, even killed in recent years in car crashes because they're not kept secure enough.
What the analysis found is that 48% of children ages 10 and under who were injured in these crashes over this five-year span, and 51% of children who were killed during that time were either using a seatbelt prematurely or no restraint instead of a car seat.
That is AAA's Aixa Diaz. Six people have now died in Atlanta's Fulton County Jail in recent months.
What advocates warned was that adding more jail space, more beds, did not solve the institutional issues, the cultural issues that exist within the Fulton County Sheriff's Department.
Devin Franklin with the Southern Center for Human Rights. Meantime, the search goes on for a Brazilian man who escaped from a Pennsylvania prison near Philadelphia more than a week ago. He has been convicted of murder. KYW-TV's Carrie Corrado.
Those who live near where police are searching say they are grateful for the efforts.
These guys are doing a good job, I think. You know, the police officer and other authorities are really, they're really covering all parts of it.
A spokesperson for Longwood Gardens says they will remain closed until further notice.
At the U.S. Tennis Open in New York on ESPN. It took a lot longer than it should have, but America's Coco Gauff has won her semifinal match. She's now in the finals for the first time. Big reason for that delay, a disruption by four environmental activists in the stands. One of them glued his bare feet to the cement floor. Gauff says she is not mad about it. Do you know what your car or your car maker know about you or your passengers? Well, the nonprofit Mozilla Foundation says if it's a high-tech car, it's a lot. Tina Patel of CBS LA.
All automakers, according to them, are collecting more data than is necessary, not just how fast you drive or what music you listen to, also demographics about you and your passengers. And Mozilla says automakers are sharing and selling that data.
This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
My car really needs a wash.
The $20 Meguiar's bundle includes Gold Class Car Wash for a showroom shine.
And what about my tires?
Just spray the included Hot Shine tire coating and you're all set.
The inside is not great.
No problem. The quick interior detailer in the bundle can help with that too. Restrictions apply.
Ew. Gotta get rid of this old Backstreet Boys t-shirt.
Tell me why.
Because it stinks, boys.
Tell me why.
I've washed it so many times, but the odor won't come out.
Tell me why.
No, you tell me why I can't get rid of this odor.
Have you tried new Downy Rinse and Refresh? It doesn't just cover up odors. It helps remove them.
Wow, it worked, guys.
Yeah.
Downy Rinse and Refresh removes more odor in one wash than the leading value detergent in three washes. Find it wherever you buy laundry products.
Hey, everybody. Glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. At 4 in the morning, my phone rang. They said, I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action. Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Mainly cloudy overnight with a low of 51. Winds out of the northeast around 5 miles per hour. Bright sunshine tomorrow, highs around 71. Lows dip down to about 48. Tomorrow night, mainly clear. Highs level off around 80 Saturday under mainly sunny skies. 73 Sunday, chance for scattered thunderstorms. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 60.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. That makes it Friday Eve up in here. Woo-hoo! Playing hardball. Dom, we've got a fine journalist in the lobby. He will join us very soon. He is Patrick Marley from the Washington Post. We've known him for a number of years. He was with the Journal Sentinel, and his beat has been Wisconsin state politics for a long time.
A lot to talk about there.
And his colleague at the Washington Post, columnist Jennifer Rubin, her submission today, and the biggest reason we got Patrick joining us in like 15 minutes, Wisconsin GOP entertains a constitutional crisis. Again. That's Rubin's headline. Now, you, the fair listener, you know much of this story, but we're going to rehash a little bit for Dom's shady memory and a few of you.
Tell him once, tell him twice, and tell him again, Curdy. This is a very important issue, and it's all over the national news.
Wisconsin Republicans received a drubbing in April when progressive judge Janet Protasiewicz won the election to fill the swing seat on the state Supreme Court, giving progressives a 4-3 majority. Oh, that was a sweet night, Dom. Indeed, Republicans lost by 11 points, a virtual landslide in this evenly divided swing state, should have curbed their appetite for radical gerrymandering and 19th century abortion bans, both of which were front and center in the race. Now, however, Republicans threatened to countermand the voter's choice and send the state towards a constitutional standoff. I think we're well on our way, Dom. Republicans are openly talking about impeaching Protasiewicz before she has heard a single case. That's in italics here, Dom. Led by right-wing Radical Assembly Speaker Robin Foss. That's a good descriptor. Republicans accuse Protasiewicz of prejudging redistricting cases pending before the Supreme Court because of comments she made during her campaign. However, as the Associated Press reported, she never promised a rule one way or another, although she observed the lines were unfair and rigged. Well, that's just observable, Dom, but I'm going to keep reading here from Rubin. Republicans also claim she must recuse herself because she accepted money from the Democratic Party. She has promised to do so in any case in which the party is a litigant. In the redistricting case, the Democratic Party is not a litigant. But Dom, Republicans have threatened to move forward unless she recuses herself from the case, challenging the redistricting lines. And because Wisconsin limits impeachment to cases of corruption or commission of a crime, neither of which apply here, this would be a blatant misuse of the Constitution, a usurpation of judicial powers, and a violation of the separation of powers, or a Thursday, as we call it here in Wisconsin. And here's the kicker. If the assembly moves to impeach her, she will be automatically disqualified from ruling until the state Senate trial, even absent any evidence of misconduct, making this all the more reprehensible. I think that's been the plan all along. Vote in the assembly and leave her on the back burner for as long as you can. Wisconsin Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu, a Republican, has said the chamber would not consider acting on Protasiewicz. CNN reported if the Senate does nothing, the court would be deadlocked 3-3. However, as CNN reported, if the assembly votes to impeach the justice and the Senate were to convict and remove her from office, Democratic Governor Tony Evers would appoint her replacement. And if she is removed and the governor appoints replacement before December 1st, the justice would be up for election on the GOP presidential primary date in April, when GOP turnout will be at its highest.
Crudy Rubin continues at the Washington Post, dealing a setback to Republicans, a state judiciary disciplinary panel, after reviewing her comments, the Judicial Code of Ethics, state Supreme Court rules, and relevant decisions by the state and U.S. Supreme Courts on Tuesday rejected several complaints lodged against Protasiewicz that alleged she violated the Judicial Code of Ethics for comments she made during the campaign. Interestingly, the panel cited a federal case in Wisconsin that ruled there is a distinction between a candidate stating personal views during a campaign and making a pledge, promise, or commitment to ruling a certain way. Indeed, as the New York Times reported, Republican justices have said comments comparing homosexuality to bestiality, calling Planned Parenthood a wicked organization, such as those made by Justice Brian Hagedorn, don't require recusal in gay rights or abortion matters. It is also noteworthy that Wisconsin Republicans have repeatedly rejected efforts to set recusal standards, leaving the decision to justices' discretion. The impeachment scheme is indicative of Republicans' refusal to accept the results of elections that don't go their way. And for the CJs out there, I'll just repeat that again. Jennifer Rubin, the former conservative, perhaps still, but not a Trumper. The impeachment scheme the Wisconsin Republicans are considering is indicative of Republicans' refusal to accept the results of elections that don't go their way. They seem to believe that no Democrat, no matter what voters say, can legitimately exercise power. House Republicans are contemplating a similar baseless impeachment of President Biden, Rubin notes. State Democratic Party Chairman Ben Wickler, in a Tuesday evening news conference, denounced what amounts to extortion aimed at the justice simply doing her job. As he pointed out, even the threat of impeachment could cause judges to look over their shoulder, wary of antagonizing the Republican majority legislature. He also announced a full court press to head off the impeachment stunt, including a $4 million initiative from the party and allied groups to sound the alarm, with a particular emphasis on Republican state senators whose constituents voted for the justice in April. Under the banner Defend Justice, Democrats are initiating a multi-pronged statewide campaign to hold Wisconsin legislative Republicans accountable for their unconstitutional, anti-democratic threat to impeach Justice Janet Protasiewicz. Democrats plan digital ads, voter outreach, and public events to inform voters that Republicans are attempting to win through legislative extortion what they couldn't win at the polls, and urging them to contact their state representatives. Wickler, in a phone interview with me, Jennifer Rubin, on Wednesday, said, "This isn't a Democratic moment or a Republican moment. It's a rule of law moment." He urged Republicans who don't want to see the party walk off a cliff to speak up now. In a positive sign, Paul Bucher, B-U-C-H-E-R, a Republican with 22 years as the Waukesha County District Attorney, told the New York Times, "It's absurd. This jump to impeachment, that's just what we do today to people who we don't like in office." Yeah. Ain't that the truth? Nothing short of the rule of law, the system of checks and balances, and the sanctity of elections, plus the future of Wisconsin's abortion rights, gerrymandering, and certification of the 2024 presidential race, which the state Supreme Court could adjudicate in a case of dispute. Nothing short of those things is at issue. Jennifer Rubin at the Washington Post. Man.
844-967-2789. Now I'm going to set some ground rules, CJ. If you can't stay on topic, I'm hanging up immediately. So play along or get lost. CJ, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates. Where do you stand on the impeachment of Janet Protasiewicz? That's the topic we're talking about here. What do you think?
Well, I guess I got to comment on that topic because
yes,
you'll start calling your name because
stay on topic. Stay on topic, CJ.
Name caller.
Here we go.
Right? Call me names. Maybe she shouldn't voice her the way she's going to vote on issues and take money.
She didn't.
From the Democrat
she didn't
Party.
Say how she was going to vote on the issue, CJ.
She did.
Didn't say that.
She used her First Amendment rights.
She said the maps
were unfair and rigged. Those are the specific quotes we see over and over again.
She's going to vote for the maps?
No, in probability, she would vote against the existing maps, just like Dan Kelly would have voted for the existing maps. The voters of Wisconsin had a clear choice, and they made it. They're voting against rigged maps, CJ, by voting in Protasiewicz.
You know, I note the caller that called before me. She actually defined her as a woman. And, you know, I'm very happy to hear that she, you know, is able to do that because our new Supreme Court justice can't. But, you know, I love the fact that, you know, we're actually, I guess, you know, it's hardball. And the Democrats have proven that they can lie and cheat better than the Republicans.
Give an example.
I don't see that, CJ. So let me understand your objection, and I want to get your opinion. Your claim is that since Janet Protasiewicz gave an opinion that she thought the maps were unfair, that the maps were rigged, is grounds for her recusal from any case. Now, I would disagree with that. But my question to you, CJ, Dan Kelly, he claimed that the maps were constitutional. If Dan Kelly won and was the justice on the conservative majority Supreme Court, would you want Dan Kelly to recuse himself because he said the maps were constitutional?
They were constitutional at that time.
But is that an opinion, or is he prejudging the case?
It's only constitutional if the court rules it.
Constitutional until it's constitutional until they're changed.
Well, when I was a...
You voted for that, and abortion is how Protasiewicz got in.
Yeah, people disagree with you, CJ, and the Republicans, and it's killing the Wisconsin GOP and nationally as well. They're going to continue to lose on it, CJ.
Isn't the will of Wisconsin voters supposed to be the law of the land here, CJ?
We're not going to lose because our first woman president is coming, and she knows how to deal.
First woman president?
We tried. Right? We'd get a good faith effort. Decent faith effort.
You mean with CJ? I feel less than compassionate. We're never going to change his mind. He's not great company. But you're welcome to call each and every day, CJ. We know you do. 844-967-2789. If this guy only had a people meter, we would be golden. Dom, we got a fine guest. We are golden. Patrick Marley from the Washington Post. He's kind of a big deal. His beat, Wisconsin politics. And it's going to be hardball up in here the next couple months, years, lifetimes, generations. When's it been a slow day in Wisconsin? It's been a while. Come back. Patrick Marley and the Devil's Advocates.
Come on, baby. Run crazy. Goodness gracious, this is great balls of fire.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. If you miss any of this fine program, go to civicmedia.us, click on the shows tab, track down Devil's Advocates. You can listen to podcasts and interviews.
Dominic, this show getting better right now. We got a fine guest here in the Madison studios, WMDX. He is Patrick Marley. He is a journalist with the Washington Post. This is where he lives. This is his beat, the state of Wisconsin. Patrick, welcome to the Solidarity Realty, the we like to think of as the Devil's Advocate Studio. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Patrick, we've known you for a number of years. You were with the Journal Sentinel out of Milwaukee for a number of years. And while we offer opinion each and every day, we try to quote sources. And you might be the most quoted source over the history of the Devil's Advocate Show.
I don't know.
Congratulations.
State politics. This has been your beat for how long?
Let's see. I started the Journal Sentinel in 2004. So it's coming on 20 years, 19 years.
19 years. We're working on 13 ourselves.
Very good.
Very good. Patrick, does any of what's happening now with the threatened impeachment of Justice Janet Protasiewicz, any of this surprising to you in this current political environment?
Is it surprising? I mean, I guess one thing that I have enjoyed about covering Wisconsin politics all this time is that you're always in for a surprise, and we are in a surprising place. You know, this is not an expected turn. I knew there would be a huge fight over her taking office, once she took office, because it's a huge shift on the Supreme Court. The conservatives who controlled it for 15 years, and when she got elected in April, we knew that we'd see a total change in the way they approach cases. And there's high profile cases, as we know, there are these redistricting cases, an abortion case could come soon. So you knew there'd be a big push to get her to recuse from those cases because of the comments she made during the race. I don't know that I saw impeachment coming, especially not, just weeks into her time on the court.
Little or no criterion yet for impeachment, let's just say. Patrick, do you, we read a opinion column, I believe, from the Cap Times today, and it suggested that perhaps the courts were politicized first with the Butler-Gableman race. Did you see a shift, any change? The example, I believe, was the financial support of these outside groups really came into the court race at that time. Is that when we saw some shift in Wisconsin politics?
Yeah, I think that's a key moment. There's sort of an early glimmer of what was to come in court races in Wisconsin a year prior when Annette Ziegler first ran. That was 2007, I believe. And that's when you first saw these races start to take on the kind of money that you would see in a, congressional race or a really big legislative race or a minor statewide race, a political race. And then it really intensified with the Gableman-Butler race because the stakes, again, at that time were for the majority. And you had an intensification of the rhetoric around it. And then it's just been, not every cycle, it depends on race to race, but it's just getting more and more intense. And you saw that culminate in this year with a race that cost over $50 million, which is a stunning amount of money. I mean, that is, that's not at gubernatorial levels, but that is a huge sum of money.
Is that, if I recall, Patrick Marley, with the Washington Post here in the Madison studios, that was the greatest expenditure on a judicial race in American history.
That's correct. Any state.
Blowing it out of the water, though. It wasn't even close.
I think the previous example was from almost 20 years ago and was from Illinois, and I can't remember exactly, but maybe $15 million. So even accounting for inflation, this blows it out of the water. And, Wisconsin is a relatively small state. If you're comparing it to California or Texas, we are far beyond what those states have spent on races. Actually, I don't know if California elects its judges, but at any rate, Texas does. And we're spending way more than
that. Well, even now, sort of intra-term, we're seeing a promised expenditure of the Democratic Party of the state of Wisconsin and other groups in support of Protasiewicz. Mm-hmm. I don't recall anyone ever putting $4 million behind a candidate who's already on the court, Patrick.
Yeah, you could say this is like an extension of the campaign beyond the after the election period. And if impeachment really does happen, or they, pursue an impeachment inquiry, we don't know what that would look like. But if they do that, you would imagine that, the Democrats and the groups on their side, that's the starting point, that $4 million, that would go up. And of course, the Republicans are going to have to, even if they don't match it dollar for dollar, they're going to start spending in the thing too. So all of a sudden, you have this political campaign without a race.
Before I let my buddy Dominic in here, and we'll give him a majority of the time in the next longer segment, we've got Patrick Marley from the Washington Post. I'm sure through the course of your life, you've had political friends of all different stripes. Do you find when you tell the stories of Wisconsin, do you find that if they're not watching closely, they're occasionally taken aback, surprised, shocked, even by the political means being utilized in this state?
Well, I mean, sure, but you find lots of, you know, you talk to people, even sometimes people from Wisconsin, and they're like, wait, Supreme Court. Well, first of all, sometimes they're like, we have a Supreme Court. And then they're like, and we elect them. I mean, it's just such a different system than you have at the federal level where they're appointed. So, you know, I think it remains true that people expect judicial races to be different than purely political races for Congress or the legislature. And they expect it to be this more, you know, high-minded discussion of things, not raw politics. But that is what it is turning into.
We talk about Borking. Once upon a time, Justice, or he could have been Justice Bork, but he never became Justice Bork because he told perhaps a little too much about himself. That was the way. It was very conservative. When we see court hearings on Capitol Hill in D.C., they don't ever tell us their opinions about much. That has changed as well, has it not, Patrick? We're short on time, but quick thoughts.
In terms of for political
judicial races here in Wisconsin.
If anything, though, it's changed. It used to be that candidates would not really tell you what their views are. Now they're starting to give more hints about what they think. They might not explicitly say it, but they say it in so many words oftentimes.
Patrick, I'd love to talk to you about recusal rules and maybe even give Dom an opportunity to say hi. Come back with us. Patrick Barley here in Madison, Washington Post reporter. We are the Devil's Advocates. Thursday, that makes it Friday Eve. So Dom's turn is next.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Experience Nightlight, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. Presented by Joy Engine. The dazzling spectacle is an immersive 4D light festival taking place in Milwaukee's historic Mitchell Street neighborhood. Digital animations, dance, music, art, and fashion combine to create a visual, family-friendly sensory experience outside of 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event. Nightlight, where art comes to life. Information at joyengine.org.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crudités at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were crudy takes.
Crudies takes. See, man, it all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. My Grandpa Lou is the reason why my dad and I started racing, and I'm really proud to follow in his tracks. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. I've learned a lot on this journey with my grandpa Lou, and the memories of my grandpa will always be with me. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Talking about Alzheimer's can be really tough, but if you notice something, have a conversation with your loved one. Encourage them to see a doctor or offer to go with them. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. The Alzheimer's Association provides care, support, and research to help you take control of the situation with your family and manage the disease together. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time-to-talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. The first time I heard about biomarker testing was actually my husband. He just started researching about lung cancer.
And I found out about biomarker testing, and I'm like, why not? Let's try it.
I'm Dr. Jorge Gomez, thoracic medical oncologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Comprehensive biomarker testing is looking for either substances in the blood or mutations in some of the genes of the cancer cells that can help us identify special types of lung cancer that can be treated with what we call targeted therapies.
Letting my children know brought all of us a sense of hope. To give them hope that mom is gonna be around to see you grow up. And I promised them that.
Ask your doctor about how comprehensive biomarker testing before treatment may help you and your doctor decide on the best treatment for you. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Mainly cloudy overnight with a low of 51. Winds out of the northeast around 5 miles per hour. Bright sunshine tomorrow, highs around 71. Lows dip down to about 48. Tomorrow night, mainly clear. Highs level off around 80 Saturday under mainly sunny skies. 73 Sunday, chance for scattered thunderstorms. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 60.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling through the Thursday Happier Happy Hour. We are happy because we got a fine guest. He is Patrick Marley, journalist with the Washington Post. He joins me here in the Madison studio, but I'm going to stop playing Monopoly, Dom. You get to roll now.
I know I can see you, but I can't see Patrick. Patrick, hey man, thanks for coming around. Great to talk to you once again. And literally, man, thank you for the reporting over the years. You know, Crude and I get on the radio and talk a lot of trash and have some fun, but we have to go to sources. We have to find information and accurate information. And your journalism has been a source of that, as Crude mentioned, for some time. Your colleagues, Molly Beck and Jesse Poy and others here locally. Certainly Jennifer Rubin nationally, we quoted her in the last hour. We've been reading her stuff. So thank you for that. But Patrick, I want to get a quick opinion before we get back into some of the issues of the day. Journalism in general, as you mentioned, you've been around for some time now. How have you seen it change with ownerships and funding and of course in the Trump administration, a lot of, you know, fake media kind of, you know, turning against journalism. How do you handle that as a profession, and how do you think the industry is doing these days?
Well, first of all, thanks for saying all those nice things. I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, yeah, journalism's in bad shape, especially for, mid-sized markets, smaller markets. I don't think a lot of people recognize the difficulties that newspapers are having for a variety of reasons, most of which is that people can get a lot of information for free on the internet, and it's not always, you know, you get what you pay for. So sometimes you find some free things that are really interesting to read. They just happen to not be true. And so people have gotten out of the habit of paying for good quality information, which is what they need to do if they want to have a healthy democracy, because we have to have, you know, facts that everybody can agree on, and then they can dispute what the best thing to do about them is. And, right now we have a lot of people cannot agree on what reality is. And if you can't agree on what the facts are, then it's pretty hard to govern yourselves.
Patrick, the state of Wisconsin has mentioned very a lot to talk about over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years. When you're out with your national press colleagues, and they know you're beat in Wisconsin, I feel like we're always the center of things. And not only just because we live here and I'm, you know, the kind of the ego guy, but I think like, man, it's like everything that happens here all of a sudden kind of starts, you know, happening, popping up other places. What's the sense of Wisconsin as a political state with your colleagues in the media?
I mean, I think there's a recognition that it is one of, you know, a couple of ground zeros in American politics. And, you know, we have always been the swing state, or we have been for a couple of decades at least. And so we're in the middle of the action, and the overall playing field keeps shrinking, right? Wisconsin has remained this battleground, but others have fallen off. You know, Florida isn't a battleground anymore. Ohio isn't anymore. Now, it is true that places like Georgia and Arizona have become new states that have to be closely watched because that's where presidential elections are decided. But the overall number is smaller than it used to be. So if anything, Wisconsin's relevance has increased. I mean, it's pretty wild when you think about it. The last presidential election in Wisconsin was decided by 20,000 votes. The one before that was decided by 30,000 votes. And like, we're this key player in who the next president is. It's you know, these tiny margins have outsized impact.
Well, and you have judicial races like Hagedorn Neubauer that came down to 5,600 votes.
Exactly, yes.
Here in the state of Wisconsin. Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates. We've got Patrick Marley, our fine guest from the Washington Post. I want to shout out Stein as well, though.
Absolutely.
You can't Brother not acknowledge your partner in crime for many years. I have my own partner in crime, you know. Anyways. Patrick, thank you for joining us here. The January 6th, you talk about the Wisconsin-centric nature of the news cycles and sometimes the political malfeasance, I would say. But the January 6th, in many ways, centered around the actions of what happened here in Madison and the failure to accept the outcome of Wisconsin's election. And that seemingly is still going on to this day. I mean, we've still got John Eastman visiting the assembly speaker trying to promote overturning elections that are years gone by, Patrick. Let's talk about the January 6th. What do you think Wisconsin's role is? Is it just because we're a swing state, or was there a particular emphasis on this state?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we have in Wisconsin any more role than the other swing states. There were seven states in all where the, you know, Trump electors claimed to have won the state, even though they had lost. Most of those are swing states. For some reason, New Mexico did this as well, even though I think Trump lost by 10 points there. But, you know, very close in Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona, some of these other states where you had these people purporting to be electors. And there's different nuance from one state to the next. I don't know that Wisconsin has, you know, that it wound up in that mix for any reason other than it was a very, very close state, and one where, you know, here we had this recount that went to the state Supreme Court that got decided just an hour before the electors met.
Well, and in Michigan, we've seen the false electors charged criminally.
Yeah.
Patrick, is it surprising at all we haven't seen more stories about or criminal indictments of or more focus on the actual electors, the fake electors here in Wisconsin?
So there's been no indication that I have seen that the Attorney General, Josh Call, is investigating that as a crime.
I've asked. He does not seem very interested.
I mean, we can't say he's not done an investigation because he hasn't said that either. But, you know, I think we would, when there's a criminal investigation, you start to get indications of it. And we haven't seen that. Jack Smith at the national level seems not to be going that route, though he hasn't, you know, completely closed out his investigation over the 2020 election. So I suppose it's possible. But what you're seeing is that different states are handling this differently. Michigan charged, they have 16 electors there. They charged them all with very serious felonies. I think 8 felonies each, you know, could be decades in prison if these people were convicted of all charges and given maximum sentences. Georgia, some of the electors were charged there. I think 3 of them were. Others were given immunity. And in other states, you know, Arizona's investigating, but we don't know where that's going to go. Wisconsin seems not to be doing that.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Patrick Marley, now with the Washington Post, formerly of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. That's where we met you on the beat, running around all over the place, Patrick. I want to talk about the journalism thing, and I appreciate the updates on the current events, but I'm really curious on your impressions during your career and as we stand now. You know, the technology change you mentioned, people have now gotten new sources from different areas, and, you know, free is always good. People like free, not necessarily accurate or quality. How do you see the siloing of information content consumption? How do you see that as affecting how news and facts are distributed throughout the society?
I mean, it's, you know, concerning that you've got, you know, it used to be years ago, you had three major networks, right? And people would choose whether they watched ABC or NBC. It wasn't that much different. What's great about today is you have this vast variety of things that you can choose from. What's bad about today is you have this vast variety you can choose from, because people choose, especially if they want news that has something that reflects their own point of view, they'll watch or read or hear that stuff, and they won't hear things from the other side. And it gets to the point where people cannot conceive of the idea that people who believe differently than them political have good intentions at heart. It's the other side is evil. And there's an inability to understand the other side. I think that's one of the downsides of this siloing that you see.
At the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I believe it was Roy Wood Jr. I met him, a comedian, funny guy. But his criticism, he said, you know, some of the greatest journalism in this room is happening in place behind a paywall. And mm-hmm. I would say, you know, certainly is the case with the Journal Sentinel. We've seen the evolution of that. And every media outlet's got to have their own monetizing way of doing it. I'm in the radio business. We sell ads. But I have often thought that radio, and I'm not trying to take you too far afield here, Patrick, but radio in the state of Wisconsin, I thought, had an outsized influence because we've always had slow internet in many parts of the state. Mm-hmm. And even if you have a desire and a willingness to invest in subscription media, you don't always have internet that delivers that in a timely fashion, and at least not streaming, whatever the case may be. I always felt like this electorate here in the state of Wisconsin is getting a lot of their news from talk radio, and it's free and it's always there and you can turn it on in your car. And I felt like if, quote unquote, the left or something other than conservative thought didn't put some free outlet out there, I always read the Post. I love the Post. I can afford a subscription to the Post. A lot of my listeners never read the Post. Cost too much money. Do you?
They missed a great Labor Day sale where they could have gotten a year for $29 or 50 cents a week. I came on too late for the plug. But I hear your point. I mean, we can't all, like, look, I'd like to read all of the Ohio papers and all of the Michigan papers and all of the Wisconsin papers. You know, there's also the time component, right? You can't, like, who hasn't looked at their phone, and, you know, it's this bottomless well of information, and you get overwhelmed. So it's like as much a time problem as a money problem. I mean, I'd love for all our stories to be free because I just want people to read what I'm writing. But, you know, they have to give me a paycheck, or at least they do if they want to keep showing up for work.
Yeah, I know how that works.
And the model has changed because in the old days, newspapers got most of their money from ad revenue. You know, the subscribers had to pay money, not insignificant amount of money, but most of their money came from ad revenue. And now advertisers, why would you go into a print newspaper, which is really expensive, when you go to the newspaper's website, target it to the readers who are clicking on certain stories, and get the exact customers you want for a much smaller cost? Well, that's good for the businesses that are advertising the paper, but it's not good for the newspaper because they're making much less money and their costs haven't gone down.
Any concern amongst the, let's call you a real journalist, as contrary to Dom and I, any concern about these sort of newsrooms that are funded by political motive?
Absolutely.
We see 501c3s or whatever, and they look very newsy and they offer you lots of content, and then you realize, but it's probably driven by political agenda. Patrick, how invasive do you think that is currently?
I mean, it's a problem. It's definitely a problem to have anything that is presented as news that is not news, that's got some other motive behind it. And sometimes that's just clickbait meant to, just get you to click and get money that way. Sometimes it's something for a partisan reason. Sometimes it's super obvious. You go to the Gateway Pundit, it's like, oh, I can see these people's agenda. And sometimes you go to a site and it initially looks like it's, just normal straight ahead news. And it's not until you've spent some time with it, it's like, oh, wait a minute, what is this site? Where did it come from? And, people are overwhelmed. As I said before, it's hard to do your independent research every time you go to a freaking website.
Patrick, do you feel like as a journalist, and I realize there are limitations ethically, I did go through some journalism classes, Tom never did, but we are not constrained by being able to offer our opinions through the work we do here. Do you ever feel constrained as a journalist to say, well, this side said and this side said, but this guy lies through his teeth constantly. You really shouldn't believe him. He's not credible. But you can't really lay that out in every journalistic article.
So no, I don't feel constrained. I'm not one that really wants to share my own opinions or let them color the work that I do. But if I am quoting two people and one of them has a history of lying through their teeth, I just tell the readers that, right? Like if you lie to me, I'm going to either not quote your lie or I'm going to quote your lie and tell my readers that it's a lie. So, we have a duty to not just prevent Democrats said this, Republicans said that, and you decide. We do want you to decide, but we want to give you full context and all the information. So, if we're going to talk about recusal rules with the Supreme Court, it's important to say suddenly everyone's views have changed on recusal rules. And that goes from the right, which has said nobody should ever have any say, you have a duty to sit, to all of a sudden like, boy, I don't know if this justice can sit in this case. And simultaneously on the left, them saying we need this really hard and fast recusal rules, this really high standard, objective way of looking at it. People need to get out of the way. If there's even an impression of possible conflict to, well, I don't know, we have a duty to sit. You got to hear the case. It doesn't look like a problem to me.
Patrick Barley from the Washington Post. Great radio show or greatest radio show ever?
That sounds like a trap.
More Devils. We'll be back.
Thank you, Patrick.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. Devil's Advocates know how to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and we're all out of bubblegum.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, our last segment of the day. So if you got something to say, hit us up right now at 844-967-2789.
I think I was overindulging with Patrick Marley there. we were trading war stories, It's good to see a fellow journalist.
Fellow journalist?
Fellow journalist.
Yeah.
Now that he's not here to correct me, I'm going to call myself a fellow journalist with Patrick Marley.
Yeah, your journalist hat on now here. I thought you were just a talking head.
Well, he's with the Washington Post, and I'm with the Madison Bureau of the Devil's Advocates. great to see Patrick Marley. I was telling him, he asked me, what about Ron Johnson? When's the last time you guys had him on? I said, it's been a while. And I told him the story about the off the record with Ron. And his team wanted to have an off the record with
me. Welcome back.
12 days before the election. So I tell them the story. I'm meeting Ron. And Ron, you want to talk to me? No, not really.
No, not really.
And then the whole off the record, which I would keep confidential if it was actually anything meaningful. But the off the record was effectively Ron trying to reinvite himself on the greatest radio show ever. And so far, our attitude is, don't call us. Don't call us. We'll call you. And perhaps we will someday, Dom. Perhaps.
Perhaps someday you will. I won't.
Oh, that's right. You're going to be absent that one day. Yeah. I think I know when I'm going to book Ron Johnson.
That's right.
I'll have to find out if he's in the district. Well, you can play right now. We still got time for your phone calls. 844-967-2789. Mark from the SAC, always a patient man. Mark, welcome back. What do you got for us?
Hey, Mark.
Well, you should have not, don't call us. We'll call you as a music bump when you just said that. it's ridiculous. And congratulations on keeping CJ on topic. And he just hated that you were expecting him to stay on topic.
Can't I come and disrupt your radio show with whatever random thing I read on Fox News Digital today?
And if you don't let me, you're violating my freedom of speech.
I point out to CJ that you should actually read the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin, where it says compact, contiguous, and it's
so
the Supreme Court that decides whether things are constitutional. But let's remember that Brian Hagedorn actually helped participating when Scott Walker drew up those original corrupt maps back in 2011, I believe, that he was a legal advisor in that whole process.
One must presume his chief legal counsel helped craft in some way, shape, or form, but we don't know that. We don't know. I'm sure he'd be nothing but honest in his own decision he didn't recuse the last time.
Well, they did, and they farmed it out to a law firm, right? And they had to go off-site and look at a secret room to see their district maps. I mean, so what? I mean, there was a
but it wasn't
was a firm. It wasn't him.
It wasn't. Wait. The maps in question would not have been the maps drawn or assisted by Hagedorn, because the maps that came before the court when Hagedorn was on the court are the newest round of maps that were just least changed from the baked in the cake. Right. Hagedorn perhaps influenced Scott Walker signed maps from a decade ago.
And it was interesting, a program I heard earlier today is apparently that Annette Ziegler, 11 times she violated the code of ethics when she judged on cases that her husband's bank was a party to, she should have actually recused herself. Because there actually is recusal rules for some of the lower courts. So, I mean, that this nonsense of corruption in office, I mean, by those standards, and Ed Ziegler came into the Supreme Court corrupted.
Well,
I mean,
so did Gableman. The ads that helped him win the campaign were blatantly racist and unethical and untrue. And, of course, there was no one to basically say, you're bad and you shouldn't do that, Gableman. You need to serve a penalty. Because, of course, they get to judge themselves on the Supreme Court. It's so ridiculous. 844-967-2789. Ridiculi. What's the
plural? So many ridiculousness. So much ridiculousness. Redemption, perhaps, today. Crudy of The Hill reporting. Peter Navarro, he's a former Trump economic advisor.
Redemption in his guilty.
Contempt of Congress following a jury deliberation that lasted nearly 5 hours.
Yeah, but they let the jury deliberate outside recess, and apparently his lawyer has already said they might have seen some protester signs, so they've been influenced. We've got to appeal.
Yes, that is also true, Crudy. Let me pull that one up as well. Navarro claims mistrial. It's a mistrial after ex-Trump advisor is convicted. Here's the story. Stanley Woodward, he represents Navarro in his contempt of Congress case, claimed that the jurors who deliberated for nearly 5 hours before reaching their verdict, went outside during their break and were exposed to protesters with signs related to the January 6th riot. However, prosecutors claimed they did not see any protesters outside the exit used by the jurors, and the presiding judge said he would not rule on the mistrial request until the defense provided him with video or photo evidence. Navarro convicted on 2 counts of contempt of Congress for refusing to comply with a subpoena from the White House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol. The former Trump advisor argued that he was prevented from producing documents and appearing for a deposition as requested by the committee because Trump invoked executive privilege. However, the judge barred Navarro's attorneys from using the executive argument at trial, finding that they had failed to prove that the former president formally invoked executive privilege. Navarro is the second Trump ally to face contempt of Congress charges after former White House advisor Steve Bannon was similarly convicted of 2 counts of contempt earlier this year. I mean, they're desperate. They're so desperate. Oh, my God. There are people outside. They went outside. There's protesters outside. Well, they're outside, and they're probably outside together. Oh, my God, mistrial. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. If that word be the case, then the judge will make that determination, but they're just desperate.
Margaret from Cottage Grove, you'll have the last say today. What is it?
Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I was thinking that I saw a report a few months back that Robin Voss, in a private group meeting, said that he was embarrassed to be a UW graduate. How then can he, in good faith, vote on funding for UW?
Are you suggesting the Speaker of the Assembly should recuse from all votes on the UW system due to his prejudgment of the system?
Or should he be impeached?
Yes.
Okay. I'm reading this right. That's what...
Margaret, thank you for your contribution. We appreciate when people play along. Friday's going to be the best of all because we're going into a big kickoff weekend for the Packers. We got Mike Clemens joining us, our own sports director here at Civic Media in the 5 o'clock hour. You're all going to join us. You're all going to listen. Not just us, but also to Maggie Dawn, raised in the Wisco, and Rick Smith. Keep it locked right here, Civic Media. I know you will. Guilty.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
How do you locate a support group, professional association, or local organization? United Way's 211 will provide the answers to these questions and more. 211 is your connection to programs and services in central Wisconsin. Dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In this ever-changing world, it is often hard to find the program or service you're looking for. United Way's 211 can assist you locating services. 211 is free and confidential. Trained referral specialists will help you get connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. Every day, people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, call United Way's 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. With thousands of programs in the database, they can assist you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass. Eyes waiting. Started to wonder. Metamorphosis. Loss of who you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Over the Back Fence has moved. Tune in on Saturdays at 11 a.m. for an hour of water cooler talk, items you're looking to buy or sell, upcoming events in central Wisconsin, or just whatever. Join the conversation by calling 715-424-2600, and we'll go over the back fence at its new day and time, Saturdays at 11 a.m. It's the audio community bulletin board that comes to you. We'll see you there.
I'm John O'Hurley, and I support Paralyzed Veterans of America because our heroes have sacrificed so much for our independence.
I had just come home. I had noticed my legs were swelling. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed. PVA has brought me back to life.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. It left me paralyzed. I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
For more than 75 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to never leave a fallen hero behind. That's why Paralyzed Veterans of America is providing specialized medical care, life-changing treatments, benefits our heroes earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need. Our paralyzed veterans have helped us live the lives we enjoy today. It's our turn to give them the best lives possible. To learn more, go to pva.org today.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Tom Foti in Washington. 30 years to life in prison for actor Danny Masterson, the one-time star of That 70s Show convicted of the rapes of two women two decades ago. KNX Radio's Margaret Carrero was in the courtroom as Masterson was sentenced.
One of the women that Masterson was convicted of raping said during her statement that he takes pride in hurting women. She said that he stole crucial...